I'd like you to relax and just relax, and I'd like you to fold your arms, please. Humor me, fold your arms, okay? Was not hard, was it? Some of you haven't done it yet. Come on, fold your arms. Come on, please. Fold your arms. Okay. Not hard, right? Easy. You did it without thinking. Right? Okay. Unfold your arms. Right. This is the complicated bit. I want you to put the arm that was underneath on top and the arm that was on top underneath. Okay? I can see some of you are still having difficulty and some of you are still rebelling. Okay. Awkward? Slightly uncomfortable? You have to think about it? Okay, you can relax. Go back the other way. Okay. First time is natural, isn't it? Didn't require any thought. It's your preferred way of getting defensive. No, it's your preferred way of relaxing. This is always a sign of defensiveness, by the way. But the point is that there's no right way or wrong way of folding your arms. It's just different. And arm crossing is typical of everything we think or do. And that's my first point this morning in the story of Mary and Martha. We're continuing our series on Jesus and women. And today we come to Martha. Next week we're looking at Mary. And the first thing I want us to observe is that we must recognize in one another our unique God-given personalities. Luke chapter 10, 38 and 39. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, they came to the village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. Martha is feeling a little tense, and you probably would as well. 13 hungry men have just shown up. Not one, not two, not five, not 10. 13 hungry men have shown up unexpectedly. They're on their way to Jerusalem, and they just thought they'd pop in. And you're looking at the watch and you're thinking, right, do I have enough plates? Do I have enough knives and forks? Do I have enough food? Enough chairs? And you go into panic mode. Martha was grateful that the master felt at home with them. It was an honor and a privilege to host Jesus and his friends. But Martha is irritated as well. Not that she necessarily didn't have enough food, but that her sister wasn't helping. Mary and Martha had very different personalities. Mary's tranquil composure contrasted vividly with Martha's busy fussiness. Mary was totally absorbed as she listened to the master. She was eager to drink in every word. The uppermost question in Mary's mind was probably, how can I enjoy this moment the most? What can I learn from Jesus today? Martha was no less happy for Jesus to be in her home. But she wasn't enjoying it completely. Her thoughts were constantly on the detail and some would say the secondary issues. She was eager to serve, anxious to please, and irritated with her sister all at the same time. I wonder whether you can identify more with Mary or with Martha. What do you do normally during a sermon? Do you daydream or do you deal with your emails? That says a lot about whether you're more of a Mary or a Martha. Your God, our God, has given each one of us preferences. He's wired us differently, uniquely. And the choices we make when we relate to others reflect the way God has made us. And whether that's because of the way we've been programmed by our genes or the way we've been brought up, you know, you're just like your mother, just like your father, whatever it is, you are more comfortable living in a certain way. And when you're forced to relate to people in ways that are not natural, you will feel drained. We're very much like a battery. We have to be charged up to be really useful. And we get charged up by what we eat, what we drink, sleep. And maybe people energize you. Maybe projects energize you. But then there'll be things that drain you. Things that drain you. And once we're empty, we are useless until we're charged up again. That's why having a really good night's sleep is so refreshing, so essential. So what is it that charges you up and what is it that drains you? Do you find people fulfilling or projects more fulfilling? Martha, it seems, was more task-orientated than Mary. For Martha, it was getting the house ready, preparing the meal that energized her. And what really ticked her off was a sister who was not like her. Sister's very different, but in the words of the psalmist, fearfully and wonderfully made, just like you are. So my first observation is that we must recognize in one another our different God-given personalities. The second thing we learn from the passage is that we must respect in one another our different God-given preferences. Luke 10, verse 40. Martha says, Lord, an emphasis on that word, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha didn't seem to care that she was accusing her sister in the presence of a guest. I wonder if that happens in your home, unconsciously. Criticism that's public. Criticism that is infectious. But Martha's doing more than that. She's also questioning Jesus. She's implicating Jesus in her accusation. Lord, don't you care? She's frustrated with Jesus just as much as he is with Mary. And that's not all. She's actually ordering Jesus to do something. Tell Mary to come and help me. She thought Mary would listen to Jesus. I wonder how many times she'd failed to get Mary to help her. Whenever I read this story, I find myself sympathizing with, who do you think? If you know me well enough, Martha. Okay, let's get it on the open table. It's out in the open. I identify with Martha in her frustration. It's typical of an activist. In my philosophy of ministry is I want to burn out rather than rust up. You know, that says a lot about me. I like to fill every waking moment with activity. I'm miserable at having nothing to do, but I sometimes do complain about not having enough help. Why can't people be more like me? Jesus isn't criticizing Martha for being the person she had been created, but he is challenging her bad attitude to her sister. Martha, it seems, was not respecting at that moment the person God had made her sister. Martha was upset with Mary because she just wanted to sit and listen to Jesus when there was food to prepare. There was a table to get ready. Martha, in a sense, was upset with Mary for not being like her, for not sharing her priorities. But in the story, Jesus affirms them both. There is affection and a gentle rebuke in his reply to Martha. He's not going to side with her in the way that she wanted, although he would quite like to eat a bit later. You know, we may smile, yet most of us do this at some time or other. We wonder why people can't be more like us. They say opposites attract in marriage initially. Isn't that right? Opposites attract initially, and then sometimes those opposites can turn into something else. We get frustrated when what appears obvious to us is not obvious to them. For example, this is confession time. I'm looking around. Okay, it's safe for me to say this one. In our house, one of my ministries is the towel rack in the bathroom. Every morning, I straighten the towels because it's obvious that the towel, when it's close to the radiator, will warm and dry quicker than if you've got three or four towels up one end and nothing in the middle. So one of my ministries is straighten the towels. You can pray for me. One of my other ministries is in the shoe cupboard with seven members in the family. You can work out that's two pairs each. That's 28 shoes. And it seems self-evident to me that if you want to find two shoes that are the same color, same size, and yours, it's helpful if they are close to each other in the cupboard. Now, often the shoes are not even in the cupboard, but that's another matter. But to me, it's self-evident that the shoe should be the largest ones at one end and then in pairs all down to the smallest pair. And so you know exactly where your shoes are. But I'm one of six and I'm outvoted. People are not always the same as we are. If you're like me and you need some therapy, then I warmly commend this book. It's called The Art of Doing Nothing. And if you're like me, you think, what a waste of time to read a book, The Art of Doing Nothing. But just to mess with your mind as it messes with mine, let me read you something about why people in Southern Europe tend to live longer than those in Northern Europe. Wide awake, the conscious mind is unnerved by the idea that sofa sleeping could be construed as an active endeavor. To make sure you don't dilly-dally among pillows when you should be doing spreadsheets, your guilty conscience has you convinced that logging dozers with your clothes on is a crime against capitalism. What do you expect? The cognitive self cannot comprehend its own non-cognitive genesis. Rather than let you enjoy a harmless snooze, your conscience compels you to plod on all afternoon through the leaden and airless biosphere of the doze deprived. Don't waste any time explaining to your superego that 10 minutes in sweet limbo won't compromise your 15 minutes of fame. In a land inhabited by insomniacs, nappers will always be under suspicion. In Latin countries, it's the opposite. People don't nap, who nap are not considered odd. In Italy, Spain, and the south of France, the siesta is a sacred post-lunch digestive ritual observed by all except tourists. Like Noel Coward's proverbial mad dogs and Englishmen, non-natives wander around oblivious of the harsh midday sun while the locals wisely retire for 45 minutes in the shade. Banks, museums, post offices, churches and shops lock their doors. The traffic ebbs as Chupa engulfs the city. The best you can do on this side of the Atlantic, it's an American book, is let your internal monitor default to the screensaver mode, rub your eyes, and lean back. Close the door, lay under your desk. The brown bag lunchtime crowd compensate for the late night TV habit in scruffy patches of urban grass. Road warriors sneak out to the parking lot, slip into their cars, put the driver's seat in the full reclined position and go to sleep. Just before you pass out, admit it. A touch of guilt adds to the forbidden allure of daytime snoozing. And then it gives you the seven steps of how to do it. And people like me, it's essential that you have a list of things to do. And it tells you, close the shutters, take off your shoes, take your watch off, lie down under the covers, but not between the sheets. Close your eyes, and then you'll wake with a bump. Throw water on your face. Don't rush. You've got plenty of time ahead of you. I don't believe it. That's why I haven't read the book yet. But I warmly recommend it from those pieces I have snipped into. But the temptation is to look down on people and treat them as unspiritual or worse when they don't share our personality. The other trick we play is to find people sympathetic to our point of view and put pressure on others to see things the way we do. And that's what Martha tried to do on this occasion. She tried to get Jesus to side with her against her sister. But notice what Jesus does. Jesus gives Mary permission to be herself, permission to be different, because God made her so. So first, recognize each one of us is unique with a God-given personality. Secondly, respect one another's different God-given preferences. And then thirdly, we must relate to one another serving with our God-given devotion. Serving with our God-given devotion. Notice the way the master responds to Martha. Martha, Martha, the Lord answers, you are worried and upset by many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. In these words, Jesus implies a whole lot more. There's a warning here for Martha and for us. Gian Carson, in her little commentary, suggests Jesus is saying this. Martha, How can you mingle the primary and the secondary issues? How can you become lost in things of minor importance when I am in your home? Martha, don't you understand that I've come to serve you, not to be served? Don't you see that I'm much more interested in you than I am in food? I appreciate your hospitality, but my first concern is for you, not what you do for me. You are wise, you are efficient, but why must you do everything? Don't you understand that I would prefer a simple meal later and have more time with you and Mary? Mary doesn't need correction, just the reverse. Please be careful about judging others. Leave that to me. You know, we meet Mary three times in the Gospels, and we're going to meet her again next week. But in each occasion, she's in the same place, at the feet of Jesus. In Luke 10, here, she is at his feet listening to his word. In John 11, she's at his feet sharing her grief at the loss of her brother. And in John 12, she's at his feet pouring out her worship. It's interesting that in each of those, there's a fragrance. In Luke 10, it's food. John 11, it's death. John 12, it's perfume. Mary and Martha are often contrasted as though we have to make a choice. Be a worker like Martha, be a worshiper like Mary. And certainly we are different. But the question is not having to choose. The question is timing and priority. On this occasion, Mary is doing the right thing. Charles Wesley put it like this in one of his hymns. Faithful to my Lord's commands, I still would choose the better part, serving with careful Martha's hands and loving with Mary's heart. Yes, the Lord wants us to imitate Mary in our worship, but I also believe he would have us imitate Martha in our service. And blessed is the balance. Consider Martha's situation. She receives Jesus into her home, but she's neglecting him as she prepares the meal. The personality of the guest is more important than entertainment. And the application for us is this: what we do with Christ is far more important than what we do for Christ. It's not an either-or situation. Martha felt neglected and complains. And few things damage the Christian life as much as trying to work for Jesus without taking time to commune with Jesus. That's why Jesus says Mary chose the better part, the part that could not be taken away from her, because Mary understood that she would not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. So whenever we criticize others and pity ourselves because we're overworked, we better take time to examine ourselves, because perhaps in all our busyness, we're actually ignoring the Lord. Maybe God's message for us today is this: only one thing is needed. One thing. Mary's problem was not that she had too much work to do, but that she allowed her work to distract her and pull her apart. She was trying to serve two masters. It might have been her own expectation of herself. It might have been the example of her mother or her grandmother. It might have been a personality. But she was trying to serve two masters. If serving Christ makes us difficult to live with, then something is wrong with our service. Let me say that again. If serving Christ makes us difficult to live with, then something is wrong with our service. We can be so absorbed with work of the Lord that we neglect the Lord of the work. So the differences between Mary and Martha really had nothing to do on that day with their personalities or preferences. The key had to do with their priorities. And that's why Jesus says to Martha, as he says to us, only one thing is needed. It's vitally important that, like Mary, we spend time at the feet of Jesus every day, letting him speak to us. The most important part of the Christian life is actually the part that only God sees. Only one thing is needed. Unless we meet Christ personally and privately each day, we will soon end up like Martha, busy but not blessed. So in my pastoral ministry, when someone comes to see me to talk, I usually ask them whether they're eating properly, whether they are sleeping properly, and whether they're exercising properly. And if they're not, I'm not looking for a spiritual problem. We start with the physical. But then if they are sleeping and eating and exercising well, I ask them about their devotional life. And invariably, the response is an embarrassed look, a bowed head, a quiet confession. Well, I haven't actually read my Bible today. I haven't spent time with God alone. And invariably, they don't appreciate the link between the presenting problem and the solution. One thing is needed, says Jesus. One thing. Only one thing. Let's sum up. We must recognize in one another our unique, God-given personality. Both Mary and Martha had excellent qualities. Secondly, we must respect in one another our different God-given preferences. Thank God for the Marys in your life. Thank God for the Marthas in your family, however unlike you they may be. And thirdly, learn to relate to one another, serving with our God-given devotion. Our God-given devotion. Martha was focused on her goal, so busy being gracious and polite and a good hostess, she neglected Jesus. It is so easy to say that all we have, our time, our money, our talents belong to the Lord. But does he have our hearts? Does he have our undivided attention? Because only one thing is needed. One thing. Charles Wesley summed up this beautiful story in this verse. Oh, that I could ever sit with Mary at the Master's feet. Be this my happy choice, my only care, delight and bliss. My joy, my heaven on earth, be this, to hear the bridegroom's voice.